Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. Your number two burns the hair in my nose, but we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
D&D Versus is a spooky, scary, vile, and violent podcast intended for mature listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
Welcome back to D&D Versus, an actual play D&D adventure where one player stares into the abyss and one DM stares back. My name is Yanata Blue, I am your Dungeon Master, and with me this week is Trevor Hegstrom playing Silvo. Trevor, welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Thank you again for venturing into the darkness with me on our last episode. Silvo was a lot of fun, so I'd like it if you could start us off by telling us a little bit more about Silvo or the world he came from.
Yeah, so I've decided with Silvo to kind of lean into kind of the Brazilian origins of capoeira. So he's, you know, where he comes from is very full of lush jungles, you know, lots of wildlife all around. Society is a lot more kind of laid back than our more European or American influenced fantasy societies. Probably a bit closer to kind of how the hobbits were, you know, very chill and relaxed of a sort, except with a lot more of fancy dancing and big parties.
And probably like a carnival.
A bit more, yeah.
Smash and Pam would love to visit that spot.
I think that Smash and Pam and Silvo would get along famously. I think they'd have a great time together. In our weekly campaign, I've actually got this box of getting to know you questions that I pull out for any time one of our players wants to do a character fact. This one is, if your taxes could go to a charity instead of the government, where would you want them to go to? And I think that Silvo would want his taxes to go towards music and dance education. You know, while he's not technically a bard, he does have the performer background, and to him, music is like the rhythm of the world. It's like the heartbeat of the world. And if everyone studied and knew music, the world, most of the problems of the world would be solved.
That's beautiful. I love that. But that being said, recap for last episode, we started with Smashing Pam, who after the city fell into the abyss due to the explosions, encountered Sir Lionel Richie, his daughter Nicole Richie, who she met at the party the night before, as well as a colonel for the Order Infernus, all of whom were trying to detain her for questioning or purportedly for her safety because of the terrorist action that had just taken place. A little detective gnome gave her a strange item, but Smash and Pam ultimately decided the best way to move was forward and dove into the pit to find Captain Ludlow. Weakened by the fall and then impaired by the poison that Stephen Hark had ingested in episode 1, Smash and Pam met her untimely end and was replaced by Silvo, who, on Smash and Pam's instruction, decided to try to rescue and protect Groucho, our little dog-headed friend. Silva, you did a very good job of following the indications and clues that Groucho had been kidnapped. Venturing into the network of tunnels, you encountered a very large sort of worm slash caterpillar monster that at one point you used the tool that our little detective gnome friend gave you to throw a soul into that creature and then promptly extract it.
I really thought that the fire that was in the grabby arm was going to set the caterpillar on fire. Was not expecting it to be a soul transfer device.
Yeah, you have a soul grabby claw now. I think that's what I'm going to have to put it in the inventory as officially. You found your way into the caterpillar worm's hive and encountered a trio of other predators who managed to subdue you and are in the process of leading you back to their hideout or their city. So as I mentioned, at the end of last episode, you were undertaken by a spell that has you completely under control. You're being led by the three predators, one of whom acquired a strange, as I described it, telephone-looking artifact from the hive. You're also accompanied by the caterpillar that once again has the soul of the other predator that you found in a catatonic state outside of the tunnels. You're able to communicate with at least the caterpillar one or understand its communications because it's tapping out everything that it's communicating in sort of a Morse code. While you're still under the mind control, you're not able to move or anything like that, but you can at least hear the tapping part of the conversation.
Just to confirm, so the thing outside the cave that I put the soul into the caterpillar of, that's the same race as these guys that are now leading me through the tunnels?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So there was a catatonic body and you are now finding your way deeper into the caverns where they emerged from, potentially.
Catatonic and now he's a caterpillar.
Oh, yeah. Well done. You can take inspiration for that.
Sweet.
Yep. Okay, so as you move through the tunnels, it's maybe about 15 minutes of walking and you're going down, down, down. But the tunnel winds. So you're not just going in a straight line. You're weaving back and forth. So it's unclear how far away from the hive you actually are getting, except for the fact that you're moving deeper. But eventually the tunnel opens out onto a ledge that itself overlooks this enormous cavern that if you've ever seen like what a traditional like gravy bowl looks like. So it's kind of like a longer bowl with like a spout. This cavern is shaped kind of like that.
So the winding path that we're taking down, would Silvo, is he able to pay attention enough to see if he can make his way back out?
You could make a survival roll or you could make an intelligence roll, either one you want, to try to memorize the directions and turns. Because there are some forks and things like that, but I'll just make it a straight memory roll.
Survival will be better. Let's see here. That is a dirty 20.
So with a dirty 20, should you want to venture back and retrace your steps, you will be able to. The length of this cavern is maybe about just over a quarter mile long. It's not enormous. It's about 3 stories tall from, you know, the level that you're at down to the nadir at the bottom. Along the sides, you can see these hovels are carved out, these holes. You can see different sorts of like tracks are carved into the walls. And you can see emerging from the different hovels, other of these predator humanoids. Some of them are riding on caterpillar worms, just like the one that is currently accompanying you. At the bottom of the basin, you can see that the whole cavern is being lit by more of that phosphorescent moss, and that there are caterpillar creatures also sort of milling about very casually. So you get the sense that in the equivalence of like a standard fantasy agrarians type of village, these caterpillars are their mounts and their cattle. They have their homes carved into the walls of these caverns. But at the farthest end of this basin from you, at the very back of the bowl, you can see an enormous structure has been carved. Going back into your memories of Stephen Hark, you have a memory of the church on the refugee island that Stephen Hark awoke on. You remember the image of Honda Days on that church, this woman wearing a gown with a blindfold and these 4 bolts sticking out of her head. You see a similar image, a statuette, or I guess a gargoyle, carved over the enormous doors to this temple. However, Honda Days is not alone in this carving. Behind her is a predator who is actually holding 2 of the bolts as if either keeping them steady in her head or forcing them in. But at this point, the mind control wears off of you. You can feel a slackening around your mind. And you hear the caterpillar tap out to you again in its Morse code message. that it would like you to speak with Elder Sister.
Can Silvo move yet?
Yes, you are free to move.
Are the guards still around him?
Yeah, so you're all standing on this ledge. The caterpillar is kind of like lowering itself, and it continues tapping out, "Speak with Elder Sister." Then it adds, "And hopefully my body can be recovered, and you can put me back into it afterward."
Oh, well, I mean, that shouldn't be too hard. We can put that in. He turns to one of the guards. He says, just so you know, one of your brothers, his soul is in this caterpillar worm. What do you call them? What do you call these things?
They look at you and they look at each other. And then you hear the voice in your head. We call them caterpies.
Oh, yes, caterpies. Yes. Well, there is one of you in the caterpie. His body is just outside the cave. I was trying to get to him to put the soul back in. So I don't know if you could let me do that, or if you just want to bring the body here, then I can just put them back in. So who is Elder Sister in the end? Where is she?
Well, first, give me a persuasion roll. You can take advantage because it's to your credit that you're not, as soon as they slacken the control over your mind and body, you didn't try to run. You didn't try to fight. You're actually being very reasonable.
He's very easygoing. So that's going to be a 16.
They look at each other, and at this point, you get the sense that their telepathy kind of works like they can set up individual lines to one another, but they kind of have a group call thing going. So they're looking amongst each other, and you can actually hear their conversation in your head. As the two that are humanoid say, "We can recover the body if you can take him to Elder Sister." And you see some hesitation in them. The caterpie one taps out, "I know that we have our misgivings about Elder Sister's dedication and that she has waxed and waned from the collective mind, but she is still Elder Sister until Brother deems her not. I will take him." And so the caterpie lowers itself and sort of like wiggles in a way that seems to indicate that it wants you to ride on top of it.
Oh, okay.
So if you climb on, the two other predators are going to venture back into the tunnels to recover the body. And meanwhile, the caterpie that has had its soul transferred in and out, that one begins climbing down the walls. Because of the segmented carapace of like a caterpillar millipede, you naturally have footholds that your feet can easily catch onto and shift into as it goes vertically, so that you're basically standing upright as the caterpillar goes straight down the wall with you on it and then begins to go through the phosphorescent moss and other fruits that are growing at the nadir of the basin. So the caterpillar is going to eat a little bit as it goes, but eventually after just a couple minutes, you are at the entrance to the temple. Rather than going through the main doors, your caterpie friend begins climbing up the side of the wall around the door and leads you onto a balcony that is above the doorway and through a smaller set of windowed doors into a chamber beyond. The chamber looks essentially like a very spacious sort of dormitory room. There is a space for working, like a desk and some bookshelves. There is a seating area. There is a bed. Off in a corner behind a partition, you can make out a very large tub. And there are other things around the room, of course, other details, but you do see another predator, this one wearing very long, very resplendent white robes, seeming to be either a mage or a cleric of some kind, rises up, looks at the caterpie, and then looks at you and says in a deeper and notably more feminine voice telepathically, "Who is this? Who are you?"
"Oh, hola. Are you Elder Sister? My name is Silvo. This one is one of your people, happens to be in a caterpie. I was looking for a friend of mine. His name is Groucho, he's a boy with a dog head. Anyways, your friends outside said that I should come meet you. Hello."
"Did Dr. Frankenfooter send you?"
So this predator, whatever lady, when she said that Frankenfooter sent me, what kind of a vibe on Frankenfooter? Like, is she going to be upset if he did, or is she going to be relieved if he did?
Well, let's go with an insight roll.
Right. Okay. That's a 22.
You get the sense that she's not going to be very like bothered if you say yes. It just seems like she's mildly irked, like he's running late for a party more than anything else. It's not like she's, you know, going to behead you if she finds out you're his associate. Like, it's very far from that.
So Silvo will say, "Frankenfurter, well, I'm assuming you mean the marvelous professor and not the doctor, because the doctor is dead, but or so they say. But the professor, well, it's hard to say. You see, I think I'm dead, but he claims he brought me back from the dead, and he wants me to come meet him in his place, but I don't know if I should trust this guy. You know how it is. You wake up, a man says that he brought you back from the dead, and you should trust him. Why should I trust this man?
She arches an eyebrow and says, I'm familiar with his son, the marvelous professor. He has never ventured into our realm, and he has not tried to have any dealings with us. His father, Dr. Frankenfooter, he is the one who promised to reconnect us with Mother if we bombed the city of Panda and brought it into the abyss. I assumed he would be along shortly after our successful completion of his request.
Ah, so it's you who sunk the city?
Yes.
That seems like a very strange thing to do.
Brother has been quite worried about our loss of connection to Mother. Mother is the deity beyond all things that we worship, and we have been unable to commune with her for some time.
Yes, Ma, that's very strange. You know, I could never get rid of my mother. My mother always was nearby telling me, ah, Silvo, you need to settle down, get married. Ah, but, you know, I go to...
What does settle down?
Ah, well, you know, you see... I'm a bit of a wanderer, you know, from place to place. But she says, no, you need to stay in a place, have a wife, have the kids, give me the grandbabies. And, well, that's just not the life for Silvo.
And this is something your mother encourages. And you see her glance somewhat furtively, you know, kind of like she's a little bit uncomfortable having this conversation in front of the Caterpie person that you're with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is the nature of mothers to want the grandbabies.
Perhaps. She beckons for you to follow her deeper into the room, where on the other side of the room, you can see that there is another large paneled window. It's a curved glass. It almost looks like an eye of an insect with its many panels. She leads you over and says, as for the dog boy that you seek, he is here and we have kept him safe.
Oh, good.
We had wished to use him as a medium to try to contact Mother, but... we have yet to conduct the ritual, for we had sent a search party out to collect the artifact that is needed for it. As you can see down below, and she gestures at the window for you, he is quite safe and he is being taken care of. You see an altar in a temple room. It's lit with green light. They basically use the phosphorescent moss's lanterns. So the whole place has this eerie green light. And you can see Groucho sitting very happily on a stone altar. He's got a nice little pile of food next to him. He's got his, like, legs hanging off the edge, and he's doing that adorable thing that little kids do where they're, like, kind of kicking their legs while he eats some candy. On the ground next to him, on a bedroll, head laid up, you see Captain Ludlow. His hands are clasped over his chest, and his eyes are staring vacantly up at the ceiling, and he seems to be muttering something. Groucho isn't really paying attention to him, just kind of glancing with a slightly worrisome look on his face every now and then, but... neither of them seem to be in immediate danger.
What happened to the captain?
The captain volunteered to commune with Mother in the boy's stead, since the casting does risk the mind of the person involved. Mm. We believe that Groucho's unique existence because of the doctor's experiment would make him uniquely capable of the communion. However, Ludlow's attempt, though noble and admirable, failed. And he has now been rendered into this catatonic state.
But if she is your mother, why couldn't you commune with her yourself? Are you afraid she's going to yell at you?
Brother will not allow any of us to attempt the communion ourselves.
Why would he do that?
You see her kind of glance downward, and she looks over her left shoulder at something behind you back in the room that you crossed. She says, Brother's wisdom is ineffable, but undeniable.
Who is Brother?
Brother is the hub of our collective consciousness. He is the root of all our wisdom and decision-making, and he is the conduit through which we are able to connect to Mother.
Have you ever talked to your mother?
She shakes her head and says, no, I've never communed directly with Mother.
So wait, maybe I am not following. So if you can only talk to Brother, and Brother tells you what Mother says, how do you know that... Mother is even there? How do you know that there is Mother and it's not just Brother saying what he wants? Because I know that when I am boy and Mama goes on trips, she put Brother in charge and Brother says, I am in charge and you have to do what I say because Mom says you have to do what I say. And of course, I say, well, I am not going to clean your bathroom because this is your bathroom. And mom says you should clean. He says, ah, but I am in charge. You need to clean my bathroom. So what I am saying is, how are you sure that brother is honest and there is mother? Maybe there is no mother.
She walks a few feet away back to her desk. And you see her hand reach for something on the desk. At first, it lingers as if it's about to pick up what looks to be like a framed picture. But instead, she picks up a jar. And inside this glass jar is a lone millipede amongst some moss and other detritus. She says, to mother, we are like this bug in this glass. This bug does not know what truly exists beyond the limits of its little domain. This bug may see blurry and distorted images through the glass and limitations of its domain. But what does the bug make of my hand coming into contact with that limitation, with that barrier of its world? What does that bug make of when I open up that jar and take it out? Does that bug have any concept, even if I were to remove it from this jar, of how many other rooms beyond this one exist, all the places that I might go? Or does it try its best not to be overwhelmed with the comprehension of all those things beyond its limitations and barriers?
I think the bug knows there are two things, food and not food.
Precisely, because the bug does not have an intellectual mind that wants to comprehend. We, if it were not for brother acting as our barrier, we would be driven mad by this. And since our kind share a collective consciousness, to risk one of us is to risk all of us, which is why brother is our shield and our conduit.
So how is he able to talk to mother and not go mad? Already he has gone mad. Maybe you don't know.
Well, brother is quite a bit more resilient than all of us. He has been made to be that resilience. His very being is that resilience to the unknowable.
Right. So if he is the one that is to talk to mother, then why do you seek to go behind his back to talk to mother?
We are not going behind his back. He needed the mother crystal to act as his power source in reaching out to mother. Dr. Frankenfooter took that crystal in the efforts of powering it up and has not returned with it.
So you're missing a crystal. And if you had the crystal, brother could talk to mother. But instead, you are taking the minds of other people to try to talk to mother, but it has not worked so far.
So far, the one time that we have attempted it with Captain Ludlow's volunteering. If you would be willing to volunteer, we would be happy to spare the dog boy.
Well, why not just get crystal back? Does it have to be this crystal, or can you use another crystal?
It is a special crystal that has been touched by Mother. We would pay dearly for its recovery. We would pay dearly for the recovery of many things.
So do you know where the crystal is? Why can't we just go get it?
We do not know where Dr. Frankenfooter has taken the crystal.
I thought Dr. Frankenfooter was dead.
We have not known of this rumor. He has been alive for years, and he continues working with us in our communion with Mother. He is one of the most zealous and truest believers of Honda Days and her truth.
So, do you know where the Dr. Frankenfurter is?
The last I heard, he had business on the refugee island from which this dog boy may have come.
Quick aside about, was it Dr. or Professor Frankenfurter who created the half-animal people?
It was Dr. Frankenfurter.
And he was on the island, but on the island they think he's dead?
Supposedly.
Why do they think he's dead?
Everyone else in the world thinks he's dead because they simply haven't seen him in years. This lady is telling you, though, Miss Cleo is her name.
Of course it is.
Miss Cleo is telling you that Dr. Frankenfooter is alive and that she's seen him very recently, within the last few days.
Right. On the island, the prison island, they think that he is dead, but you have seen him. Well, why don't you just ask him for the crystal back?
Because the crystal has not functioned in some time, and he took it with him a few days ago. We are not patient enough to wait for him, since we already completed the mission and he is still yet to show his face. So we are trying alternate methods of reaching out to Mother.
Well, but before you try it on dear Groucho, why not try it on me? I mean, as far as I know, I'm already dead. So what does it matter if something happens to me?
That would be most acceptable. You are quite brave. You see her look wistfully off again across the room at something.
What does she keep looking at?
You can make an insight roll or investigation.
That is a 12 on insight.
as you cross through the city and glance through, you realize this isn't a place that has a lot of artwork. It's a very minimalist, very, you know, because of the hive mind sort of mentality, this isn't a place that concerns itself with individualism. However, her space does indicate certain amounts of personality that, you know, as a normal human, you probably take for granted. The fact that she has pictures up around the room. And with your insight roll, you just barely notice that her features do have notes of femininity compared to the other predators that you've seen, but that the pictures that are hung around this room and on her desk are of a different predator, seemingly one more masculine. And that's what she keeps glancing at. She keeps glancing at these pictures of this other predator that are around the room.
By the way, who are all these paintings of?
She does look as taken aback as a predator can with its mandibles. And she actually stammers telepathically. That is our brethren in the collective. He is known as Alpha Case. He went off on a mission to track the survivors as they are making their way through the caverns to make sure that they do not stumble upon our hideaway. And it seems that he has been captured. I'm focused on him because I have asked Brother for permission to send a rescue party, and Brother has denied my request.
You like this man? He is a good-looking man.
Give me a persuasion roll. You can take advantage of this one, too, because, again, you've been very forthright and very earnest with her.
That's an 8.
She actually kind of wrings her hands together and says, I believe it would be for the benefit of the collective if Alpha Case were recovered.
Tell me, this connecting to Mother, would it be better if a person was more intelligent or less intelligent if they attempted?
Intelligence in being able to withstand the way your mind has to be opened up to things beyond our dimension and our experience is tantamount. So, yes, it helps to be smarter.
Well, Silvo is not so smart, unfortunately.
Since we are conducting this casting as a ritual with the artifact that was recovered, and our entire collective will be in the temple, your intelligence will be fortified to make it easier.
Then let's try this.
All right, so she leads you to a doorway to the left of the windows. As you're going down, you know that thing where, like, sometimes people try to join in a conversation in a group and they make that kind of noise when they're trying to find the opening, but they can't quite? You do hear that telepathically a couple times. You can make an insight roll on that if you want to.
Oh, that would be a 16.
You can tell based on her posture, based on what you were talking about as far as this Alpha Case predator is concerned, that there is something that she wants to ask you, but she isn't quite confident enough to do so.
Is something the matter, big sister?
You strike me as... I was wondering if you could be persuaded to take on the rescue mission for Alpha Case.
Well, I'm a bit better at fighting than at thinking, but let's see if I survive these first, yes?
Yes, that is a good idea. She pushes open the door and ushers you through, and you enter the temple, and almost immediately you see her eyes kind of roll back and just become pale yellow without any iris or pupil. And you can feel this energy emanating off of her, and within moments, the other predators from the city, also with their eyes rolled back so that there are no pupils, are just marching in a very drone-like fashion.
Is this the room with the altar?
Yes. So you're in the room with the altar and Groucho sees you coming in, but obviously Groucho does not recognize you because he didn't see your body turn from Pam into Silvo.
Right. Silvo will raise a hand to the Groucho and say, Hola, Groucho. My name is Silvo. Pam asked me to look after you.
Pam, wait, does that mean, do you have Abby?
Yeah, he has turned into some very nice bracers here.
Hey, kid, how you doing?
Abby! So you're the new Pam, you're Pam 2.
Well, more like number 3, but yes, my name is Silvo. She asked me to take care of you, and I said I would try to. About Abby, when Abby talks, is it like just a sound, or is there like a flashing
light? Abby can communicate with just you telepathically, or he can broadcast audibly, or sort of like one-on-one telepath to other people as well. Right. So right now he's speaking audibly to Groucho just to help you identify that you are indeed the continuation of Pam. And for his part, Groucho, hearing Abby, trusts that implicitly and kicks off of the altar in, like, you know, very childlike fashion, just scrambles over to you and gives you a big hug around your waist.
Ah, Silvo will pet the dog head.
And he's just very relieved, but then he suddenly remembers and he says,
Mr. Silvo, our friend Captain Ludlow, I trust you remember him. He attempted to help these people with reaching out to their mother or their god, and he went all sleepy. He doesn't look well.
Yes. Maybe his mind wasn't right, but I'm going to try it now.
And Groucho says,
oh, thank you. They were telling me to try, and, well, I was feeling a bit nervous about it. Captain Ludlow, even though they say he'll be fine, he didn't look like he had a good time. All right, I'm going to sit and watch then.
Yes, you do that. Go have a seat.
Miss Cleo speaks to you again and says, when you are ready, go and take your seat upon the altar. One of the predators emerges from the crowd and sets the telephone artifact that was recovered on the altar next to you. And she says, you will know what to do with the artifact when the time is right.
Silvo is going to kind of sit cross-legged in a meditation stance to get into a kind of meditation state.
The chanting begins. You and I would recognize the sound that is beginning to mount in the hall as the old dial-up modem sound from when you were using AOL.
Oh, my goodness gracious, yes.
So all of this is telepathically building as all of these things. And then finally, you can almost tell what the direction that this telepathic voice is coming, but it's a booming, deeper voice that you just know in your heart of hearts is brother. And you hear brother say, then all of the predators in the room, including Miss Cleo, telepathically go,
ring, ring.
So Silvo will pick up the phone.
So make an intelligence save with advantage, thanks to their help.
That is an 11.
With advantage?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I told you, Silvo's not very intelligent.
I know, but here's the thing. Even if you die, you're still going to get to experience the spell. Okay, Silvo takes 22 psychic damage.
That's a lot of damage.
As this psychic damage is starting to rack your body, you have ritually cast Contact Other Plane. As your mind is being rend, as it is being shattered piece by piece, it's not so much shattering as it is crumbling. You are getting past the barriers and limitations of the universe, and you are seeing the rooms and the world beyond. And in it, you can feel a vacancy. You can feel that there is a space that should have something that doesn't. And that absence of something, it feels exceptionally wrong. It feels like a great sin in this void that should be beyond the concept of sin and right and wrong. But from the void comes another voice, and this voice identifies itself as the groom. And it says,
you may ask me 5 questions.
The voice identifies itself as the groom.
Yep.
The groom. Well, how are you doing? Poorly. Oh no. Is there something I can do to help?
Yes.
What can I do to help?
Journey.
Okay. How can these people contact their mother?
Heart.
If you are the groom, who is the bride? Ah, okay.
Because you failed the intelligence save, you lost all those hit points, but you are also temporarily driven insane. So you are also in a catatonic state. Very quickly, your eyes are opened and you see Miss Cleo stooped over you as you are laying on the altar. And she communicates exclusively with you telepathically. And she asks, were you able to commune?
I talked with her boyfriend, I think, or fiance, the groom.
And did you ask him if he is trying to come for her?
So I asked him how he's doing. He says he's doing poorly. I asked if I could help. He said yes. I asked him how I could help. He said, journey. I said, how can you contact your mother again? He said, heart. And I said, if you are the groom, who is the bride? And he said, mother. So is this your father or stepfather, do you think?
These are monikers that we attach to them to give order and reason. But if he told you to journey, and you see her stand and her eyes go blank again, as she begins communicating telepathically with someone else, and her face begins screwing with great effort. Finally, you hear that booming voice again that you know to be Brother boom out telepathically.
No!
And all of the predators that are in the temple grab their heads in agony.
Sounds like the big brother does not like your stepfather.
I asked him if we should follow the groom's instructions to journey, and he does not wish me to leave.
Well, that's your problem. He said I was supposed to journey. He didn't say you were supposed to journey. He said you were supposed to heart. I don't know what that means. Maybe you think too much with your heads. That's the thing. You're always up in your heads. You got to be in touch with the emotions. You know, there is a such thing as an emotional intelligence where you learn to relate to others, not with the head, but with the heart.
Give me your persuasion roll.
Oh, goodness gracious. That's a 3.
She just looks sullen and says, I do not know of this different sort of intelligence. I have an idea of it, for I have emotions that Brother does not impart onto me. But they are all for Alpha Case, and Alpha Case is gone.
Maybe I can fix that. Oh, did the captain wake up yet?
She looks over and says, oh, I can restore him as I restored you.
Well, if I was able to ask 5 questions, maybe he was able to ask 5 questions, and maybe we get 5 more words of wisdom.
So she goes over and she begins casting a restoration spell on him. As the restoration spell is performed, Captain Ludlow sits bolt upright, sucking in a deep breath. And the entire time he was out, he was muttering about, your voice mailbox is full. The groom cannot take your call at this time. The voice mailbox is full. Suddenly he's upright, his eyes and color returns to his face. He swoops his My Chemical Romance emo swoop out of his face and just is running his hands over his Groucho, races at him and throws a hug around his shoulders. Groucho is just, you know, doing the little kid thing of speaking a mile a minute and just saying,
oh, Captain Ludlow, Captain Ludlow, I'm so ever relieved that you're fine. Smashin' Pam, she saved my life and she dove into the darkness after you. That's how we got down here. And look, this is the new Smashin' Pam. This is Smashin' Pam 2. His name is Silvo.
Hola, Captain. My name is Silvo. Pam asked me to look after Groucho. So here I am.
Captain Ludlow nods and says, and I assume that you're amenable to the agreement that I had with your predecessors to hunt the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter?
Things are getting so complicated here. Hard to say, because these people, I've made agreement to go and rescue one of them, but I also have to protect little Groucho here. First, we're going to go and rescue, he kind of whispers, honestly, he's one of their soldiers. I think this Miss Cleo, I think she has a bit of a crush on him, but I'm not sure.
Ludlow nods and says, for the time being, many of our goals happen to be in the same direction. I was able to ask questions of whatever I encountered beyond the void. And the first question I asked, and he looks at Miss Cleo, was whether Alpha Case is still alive, and he is. And the second question I asked was where he could be found. And the voice told me, the city of Vanilla. And that seems to be where a lot of our clues as far as the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter seem to be leading us. But another question that I asked was if Dr. Frankenfooter is still alive. And the voice answered yes.
Yes, that is what Miss Cleo said. Tune aside, the city of Vanilla, that's the where Dr. Frankenfooter wanted us to meet him, right?
Yes, so when the grabby soul claw was given to Pam, it came with a note addressed to her, which if you check the note now, it would be addressed to you, because the magical ink that was used is tuned to your body's blood, so whoever's in the body, it will automatically change the words to meet your name.
Ah.
And the same thing goes for your passport papers as well. Ludlow stands up, stretches out, and looks at Miss Cleo. I will be going to Vanilla. I will make sure that recovering Alpha Case before the Order of Infernus does any damage to him, and that I will bring him back to you.
Oh, did you happen to get the body of our friend who was left outside?
Miss Cleo rolls her eyes back, and two of the members of the congregation walk outside, and they come back very quickly with the pale catatonic body that was at the tunnel. And so they lead it up, and the Caterpie with the soul in it also comes into the temple as well.
Silvo will go to the Caterpie and pull the soul out and put it into the pale one.
Just give me one unarmed strike with advantage because the Caterpie is waiting for you, but I just want to make sure you don't mess this up.
That's going to be a 23.
Okay, so the 23, you grab the correct soul, because if you'd messed it up, I would have said that you grabbed the Caterpie soul. Putting it in an empty body is no problem, so you just put the grabby claw in, and color just rushes out in a plume from where you put the grabby claw into the chest, like it just floods out and recolors his body. And the predator sits up and is telepathically wide-eyed, clasps his hands, and begins almost tearfully saying, "Thank you, thank you. You are a man of honor. You are a man of kindness. And I understand now why Miss Cleo is so ready to trust you as well. And I trust you now as well." Suddenly you hear the booming voice of Brother again.
No.
And every one of the predators goes completely still, except for Miss Cleo, who you can see her face is twitching a little bit. But Brother speaks telepathically to the entire temple.
"This is all blasphemy. This is all faithlessness. These outsiders are not permitted to leave. Alpha Case will die, as is his duty, to protect our sanctuary. You all will die as fodder for our army."
This is all in the head, right?
This is all telepathically. You can right. see that the predators are all just in zombie mode. And you, Ludlow, Groucho, the three of you can all hear this as well. It's being broadcast right. on open signal, so to speak.
Silvo would say, "You know, I find it hard to believe that a man who does not speak with a mouth could not have an inside voice."
"My voice is glorified as the chief mouthpiece of our mother."
It's not very musical, though. I mean, you'd think that if you were speaking for the mother, you'd be a bit more musical. You sound a bit more like, like I was saying, like my older brother when mom leaves him in charge.
"You do not understand the beauty and glory of my soul."
"I bet you do not understand the beauty of the dance."
First off, I want you to roll performance. I'm assuming Silvo just starts dancing.
We'll do that. Oh, for the love of... Of course, that's my first nat one, is the one thing I have proficiency on.
Oh, my God. All right. So that nat one is going to cause you disadvantage for the initiative roll that you are very likely about to make. You hear gears and pulleys turning, and maybe that large sound and the rumbling of this machinery is what throws you off your dance game right now. Behind the altar, something is rising up. And eventually you see that it's this vat of this green bubbling liquid. And semi-submerged in the vat is an enormous brain. As it speaks, you can tell that this is the voice of Brother and that this is the form of Brother, is this enormous brain swimming in this liquid.
"I am built to commune with gods."
Well, this is the point if you can't talk well to people on Earth.
So this is where I'm going to ask for an initiative roll.
Well, okay, so first battle as a monk, but with no focus points. This will be interesting. 14.
Okay, so there are a few things that can happen here, just FYI, that I won't spoil for you just yet, but I will let you know that I'm rolling for the congregation as a collective, and Miss Cleo is separate to that, which should be a little hint. Ludlow and Groucho obviously get their own actions as well. First up in the turn order is Groucho, who is going to hold his action until he gets direction from you or Ludlow. You are second in the turn order, so Groucho can take his turn after you, and I'll give you a free action to tell Groucho what to do.
So he will say, "Stay behind me, Groucho."
You're on the altar at the front of the church. Elder Brain is behind the altar, and then there's the pews with the congregation. Groucho is going to assume that you mean behind you relative to the brain. So you are between him and the brain. So far, the predators have been very nice to him. So I think he assumes the brain is the terrifying thing right now.
Okay, my turn. How close is the brain to me?
So it is only 15 feet away. The vat that rose up was right behind the altar.
Can I get to him with the soul grabby arm?
You could, yeah.
Okay, I want to try pulling his soul out with the grabby arm.
Go ahead and make an unarmed strike.
Okay. That is a 19.
you are able to pull out this soul. The enormity of this soul, like it's raging and it's rolling. I need you, unfortunately, as a reaction to this, I need you to make another intelligence saving throw, I'm afraid.
You know, this is kind of annoying that I can make a character with an intelligence dump stat, and that is all of the saving throws that I've been making is freaking intelligence saving rolls.
I'm going to be completely transparent. When you woke up, there were three different routes that you could have taken. Bless Silvo's enormous heart that he chose the route to save our dear little Groucho, but I am just saying that it's the one route where, like, yeah, intelligence should not be a dump stat, unfortunately.
Oh boy, such is life. Oh, that's my second nat one.
Ooh, okay. This time you're going to get to make death saving throws because you are with somebody who could potentially heal you this time.
Okay. What does it look like when I pull the soul out?
So this soul is sort of like a magenta, and it's more crackly. Like, whereas the other one had like kind of a calm, almost soothing sort of like candlelight fire vibe, this one feels more like a firework. And as you pull it out, it's going to automatically trigger the Elder Brain's Mind Blast, which is what you just made an intelligence saving throw against. Because you told me already that you only have 5 HP left, it's doing XD10 plus 5, so down to 0 hit points. So you are passed out. The Elder Brain no longer can act because its soul has just been removed. So Groucho is just holding his action. Ludlow is going to rush forward, and because Ludlow is a paladin that got his groove back recently, he is going to lay on hands you for 5 HP. You're back on your feet. As you come to, as your grabby claws holding this Elder Brain's roiling, violent soul, you're just seeing a bunch of people sort of like waking up for the first time. Like, they're looking around, and it's almost as if they're just seeing this temple for the first time, even though they've apparently lived here their entire collective lives. Miss Cleo is kind of flexing her hands and looking at you and telepathically communicating to all of you. You freed us. How did you do that?
Oh, I just, I took your elder brother. I put his soul in this thing. It was given to me by a detective named Colombo. Have you heard of him? Kind of a silly guy.
Yes, the exploits of Colombo are known even to us in the sanctuary, but...
Apparently, this is made by Dr. Frankenfurter himself. I have your brother's soul here. What should I do with it?
She is going to magically use a mage hand and grab the jar with the millipede that she used to explain how the pan-dimensional beings and deities work. And she is going to hold the jar open with the millipede pointed towards you and wait for you to decide.
I hope it doesn't make the millipede's brain explode to put it in there. And he gingerly puts the soul into the millipede.
So the millipede just instantly, as this soul goes into it, it just starts curling and roiling. And then after a while, it realizes that it just simply can't get out of the jar. Miss Cleo seals it. You just see this millipede curl up into a tight spiral and just go completely still. Like, it just seems like it's biding its time and knows what's going on. Miss Cleo looks at it and hands it off to one of the other predators. And you see them having private conversations. Like, you can tell from their gestures that they're communicating telepathically with one another. Just to spell it out, they've been now freed from the hive mind that they were collectively restricted under by the Elder Brain. But you have a few minutes to deal with Captain Ludlow or Groucho if you have anything you want to say to them.
So, Groucho, did you take the soul out of that one of these guys up at the entrance?
Yes, I wasn't sure what the grabby claw did, but it just felt like it was a magical thing, and I didn't want to test it on your body while you were turning from Pam into who you are now. So I thought I might try it out as a bit of self-defense, and it turns out it worked quite well, but maybe too well.
Yeah, it turned out it had the soul of that fellow in it. I ended up accidentally putting it into a caterpillar, and then I put him back.
I've been thinking about since I came down here and saw what that does is, what does the Dr. Frankenfurter want with such an instrument?
That is a good question for someone a lot smarter than me. But if there's one thing I know, is that sometimes fellows who are smart, they're too smart for their own good, you know? They think that just because they can do something, they should, and they don't stop to think, maybe I shouldn't make a little device that can pull a soul out of a body and put it in a caterpillar.
And with that mention, Miss Cleo is going to turn back to you from talking to the congregation, who actually seem very relieved and actually even there's a bubbling excitement among them to be in this new state of freedom. And as a result of that, Miss Cleo comes up to you and asks all of you telepathically, "You are now free to leave, and so am I. If you are indeed proceeding to the city of Vanilla, would you mind if I accompanied you and lent my skills so that I might rescue Alpha Case?"
"Ah, no, that's fine. I said that I would go and do this this thing. And if you want to come, you should come. Have you been up above the ground before?"
"Yes, only once. I was taken when I was named as the Sister of the Chapel to see the firmament and the stars and how infinite even this world is, so that I might have an inkling of understanding of how little I could possibly understand of the universe beyond."
"Oh, yeah. There's so much to learn and so much to see. We will have a great time above, and we'll go and get Mr. Case."
Thank you for listening to D&D Versus. This episode features Trevor Hegstrom as Silvo, and yours truly, Yanata Blue, as your Dungeon Master. D&D Versus is not affiliated with Wizards of the Coast. Support our podcast and get access to additional content at patreon.com/D&D Versus. Our next episode comes out June 12th.